How did this all come about? There are little things in different towns that you have little sects of people who get together and do things. But I come from Rochester, where they have the Dryden Theater and they have the Eastman and those kids with all the restoration stuff and films. But they don't have necessarily some of those get together, like, not in a monthly basis, at least. How did Thursday Night Terrors come about? Was there some other place you were looking at? You said, I want to do this here. Or was this one just like, damn, I love horror films and let's do this?
Well, yeah, it was a little bit of both. There was a lot of film series in town. Terror started to culminate in the summer of 2016. And so there was a lot of film series going on, great movies, but nothing really that scratched the horror itch for me. You know what I mean? And I realized that all the horror movies that I loved, I've never had a chance to see on the big screen. You know what I mean? And my girlfriend, Nicole, and I, we had traveled to Toronto a couple of times to see horror movies. One was David Cronenberg's Dead Ringers, and another one called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night was a new movie. And then there was some years back that I actually traveled to Rochester at the Dryden Theater to see David Lynch's Eraserhead. And I was like, oh, man, these screenings are awesome, you know. And, you know, I'm the kind of person that was like, you know, why can't we have this here in Buffalo? So if nobody else is doing it, I should give it a shot. So, working at the theater, I already had an in where I could contact one of the owners of the theater and say, hey, this is my idea. You know, and he said, give me a list of movies and we'll go from there. Of course, I had to pick the day of the week to do it. And I guess the most reasonable day, given the movie theater schedule, would be Thursday. I gave him, the theater owner, a list of movies and they cleared them. And then I found a local artist, Josh Flanagan, to whip up the first posters and stuff. And now Daniel P. Morris is making the posters. But at the time, got those posters out, got the social media going, and it sort of just became its own thing from there. In August 2016 was our first screening. Peter Jackson's Dead Alive was the first movie we screened.
And did you start with the idea of we're going to do this monthly, or did it start a little slower at first?
Well, yeah, so it started, I had 5 months, so the original first season was August 2016 to December 2016, and I guess the idea was if it did well, we would continue, but early on, nobody knew how it was going to be, you know, and it wasn't until that first screening of Dead Alive in August 2016 that we had it play in one of the smaller auditoriums. Now, at the theater, the Dips and Amherst, there's three auditoriums. Two are smaller, and then the middle theater is much larger. So we had Dead Alive in one of the smaller screens, and it sold out, you know, that first night. And we had people, like, lined up outside trying to get in. And it was just this thing that nobody knew it was coming, you know. And, you know, my coworkers and I were just standing there sort of just in shock. And for the next screening and the following month, we had in the larger auditorium, and we added on a local vendor, Dead End Toys and Tees, to start selling horror merchandise in the lobby. And that same month, we started doing the raffle, which has become like a part of the series now every month. So, the first screening, we had no idea what it was going to be, and then slowly you just adjust to what's happening, you know.
And so one of the interesting aspects I looked at this is you see a lot of theaters talk about, oh, less people coming out to movie theaters now, you know, more people sitting at home just consuming this kind of media from their own couch with the streaming and services and stuff like that. But you talk about this being a passion to see those movies that you love on the big screen, and being somebody who doesn't just look over, you know, Thursday Night Terror, you look over the Dips and Amherst as well as far as movies come through. Can you talk about a little bit, what does this say about people wanting to come to a movie theater?
Well, you know, I think now with the prevalence of streaming services, you know, you can watch pretty much anything you want at any time. But most of that, it's, you know, you're at home, you're alone. And you're, you know, with that sort of, there's an isolation to that. And I think we crave a bit of community, you know. And I feel like there's fewer genres that are as an amazing experience with an audience than horror movies. You know, there's a real communal experience to that. Because horror movies are you can react to them, and so the laughs hit harder when you're watching it with a full house, and the special effects work better when you get a response from an audience, you know, and it just, the theater feels alive, You know, when you got 150 people in the theater and they're just, it's electric, man, sometimes, you know, that you just feel it in the air. And that's something that I always craved. And of course, I didn't know that was going to happen. You hope, but you can't plan for something like that. You know, I feel like sometimes it might have been just lightning in a bottle where it was the right time, the right place, and just the right group of people are in town, and we all came together and something amazing happened, you know. Just a love and horror, love for horror really brought people together, and experiencing those movies on the big screen is just a one-of-a-kind experience, you know.
And are you seeing, you talk about this group coming together, is this a group that you're still seeing start to grow, or has it just been kind of like you found the group and now they know where to go, or do you see new people coming into the mix?
Oh, so we have, I like to call it the Terrors crew, but we have like a diehard group of people that comes in every month, which is amazing. But before every screening, I ask three questions, you know, who has not seen the movie before, who has not been to a Terror screening before, and who's here from outside of Western New York. So usually every time I ask whose first time is this, there's a bunch of hands that come up. So it's just wonderful that, you know, of course you want the Terror's crew to keep coming every show, but you also want to make it an environment that's friendly for people who are new to it and maybe are not as familiar with the genre as others, you know, and people want to dip their toes in, you make it a nice place for them to come and check it out. And hopefully they enjoy the experience so much that they want to come every month or, you know, whenever the schedule allows, you know, whether they're familiar with the movie or not. They just like hanging out, being there, talking to people. It's great, you know.
It's kind of a rediscovery, too, for a lot. You can see in social circles. I know I've seen online where I'll tell friends that you showed Killer Clowns from Space.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that was one along the lines where I know me and a friend back in Rochester, that's one that we love that none of our other friends have just seen. So mm-hmm. I know there's like instances like that's got to be like that where there's somebody like, hey, you know, when am I going to show this to somebody?
Sure.
You know, and it's just kind of convenient like that. Or my mom's favorite Stephen King movie growing up was Christine.
Wow.
Which I know you showed last year, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
I'm very bummed out I couldn't go to
that.
But so that coming with there and you're growing now and you're seeing these things. Talk about some of the high points that you've had so far with the series.
Well, just quickly to go back to Killer Clowns from Outer Space, that was the most attended regular screening so far. I mean, it was incredible. Like, that was the first screening of season five, which is August of last year. So that was the biggest screening, great time. But so for high points, for me personally, I would say it's the people. Meeting the Terror's crew and the people who come regularly has been the most amazing experience of my life through this series. So, for example, I get a ton of anecdotes about people who come to these Thursday Night Terror screenings and the effects it's had on them. For example, I two people had their first date at a Thursday Night Terror screening. This was maybe February 2017, I believe, for a movie called Night of the Creeps. And my friends' names are Marcus and Jamie. But anyway, they had their first date at the screening, and they ended up getting trapped inside the hearse that's sometimes parked in front of the theater for the vendor. At In Toys and Teas, they have a hearse. So Marcus and Jamie were inside the hearse, you know, just checking it out, and they got locked in there. And eventually, this first date led to them getting engaged, right? And they asked me to what do you call it when you give the wedding vows? I forgot.
Ordained?
Oh, yes. Yeah. So they asked me to do that for their wedding, and I just thought it was an amazing thing. And another quick story, another pair of people I met, husband and wife, Kyle and Brandy, you know, I met them through Terrors. They had their son, Victor, and, you know, newborn, and they brought their son in for our screening of Carrie, which we called Terror's Prom. We had people dress up in, you know, formal wear. We had a DJ. Anyway, so they brought their son, Victor, who was only a couple weeks old, you know, and they brought him in a little suit and stuff just to, like, come and hang out and, you know, say hi and everything. And it was just, I got to hold this baby, you know, in the auditorium. I had a little crown we gave him and everything. And I just thought, like, wow, this is something, I would have never imagined. And I've said it before during my intros, but, you know, I see these people, my friends now, the Terror's crew, more than I see my own family sometimes, you know, my, you know, not my immediate family, of course, but relatives. I see them like once a month, you know, and I can't say that about some, you know, other people that I get to see that often. And it just feels warm and friendly and just, you know, amazing. There's families that come in together, you know, parents and their adult children come in, and that's the thing they do once a month. And so, yeah, it's great that, you know, the series gets a lot of attention, but for me, that's the important thing, is those connections and the community that's formed through Terrors, which I never, it was just a total dream that that happened to come true, you know?
And one of the other things that I saw, too, you brought in the Crypt Speaker? Or,
Yeah, the Crypt Keeper, yeah. So we've worked with a local convention called Nickel City Con. This is going to be our third year of working together. But last year was, what, May, and we brought in the voice actor John Kassir, who voiced the Crypt Keeper from the original TV show Tales from the Crypt. And that was the first time we had, like, a guest in. And we screened the movie Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight, which is fantastic 90s horror. So, yeah, he came in and during the credits to the movie, and he started doing, like, voiceover during the credits. And so nobody knew he was exactly in the building at that point until he started doing the cackle for the Crypt Keeper. And so, yeah, after the film ended, he shared stories with the audience. He was really a great public speaker and everything. We took questions from the audience and everything, and he signed stuff and took pictures with people afterwards. You know, we're planning to do that again with larger this time. We're going to do three screenings with three guests in May with working with Nickel City Con.
Wow, that is ambitious, and it sounds really interesting. So let's follow that in. What is the future for Terrors? You are an established name here for a movie-going community in Buffalo. What's next, essentially? And if you can go into detail about May, that'd be great.
Well, so just quickly for May and working with Nickel City Con, we're going to do three nights of screenings. We're going to do the original Child's Play with the actor Alex Vincent as a guest. He played the kid in the original Child's Play. That's going to be Thursday, May 16th. And then the day after, Friday, May 17th, we're going to do Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives, with actor C.J. Graham, who played Jason Voorhees in that movie. And then on Saturday, the May 18th, we're going to screen American Werewolf in London with David Naughton. So that's, you know, it's an ambitious, you know, three nights of screenings and guests. But I think it's going to be a lot of fun, you know. And, you know, I'm always grateful to work with, like, local establishments like Nickel City Con to make that happen. But, yeah, for the future of the series, I just, you know, I hope to do more themed events, like how we did Terrors Prom when we screened Carrie. Also recently, we screened My Bloody Valentine, the original 80s slasher, on Valentine's Day. So we had the theater decorated, and we had, like, little – my girlfriend Nicole made little candy hearts that had Thursday Night Terrors written on them and stuff. And so I just hope to do more events like that. So usually in October when we have a screening, we decorate the theater just – like for Halloween, like the windows are plastered. It looks, you know, like a haunted house when you walk into the lobby usually. So, and we had a DJ, my friend Nelson Rivera came in, and, you know, he's the DJ when we have these special events. So I just hope to do more themed events like that, you know, and just keep the series going, you know, play, the way I book these movies is I will do a couple of really big titles, for example, Christine, and, you know, we got The Howling coming up, and, you know, and then mix it in with smaller titles, lesser known titles, just so, you know, we could, the longevity of the series, you know, is there, because we're not just screening the big hits, you know, we're playing the deep cuts, a little bit of everything, so we have a lot of options, you know what I mean? So I'd love to just, you know, branch out a little, maybe do some more 90s horror, maybe even sneak in a couple of 2000s titles that never really got the screen time they deserved, you know, maybe dig deeper back into the 70s, just, you know, just do a full scope of horror, you know, and hope that people keep coming and enjoy it, you know.
And one thing I got to ask before we get to a little more less terror stuff but more stuff on the horror genre, mm-hmm. in general, is talking about it, because again, growing up in Rochester, I got to see The Dryden.
It's a beautiful theater.
And it's an awesome theater, and they have the film restoration program over there. So that was like seeing Gremlins 2 on the big screen was actually one of my highlights of my life. Yeah. It was a New Year's Eve. They did a Gremlins back-to-back.
Cool.
And I didn't realize that Gremlins 2 was a giant Looney Tunes episode. Joe Dante.
Yeah, exactly.
And to me, like, it was just the coolest thing in experiencing that. But the thing that I always loved about the Dryden is they really take the film seriously as well as showing the film. Mm-hmm. So are any of these, are you getting any of the like original film when you show them at all? Or have you been able to do that? Or is it just all digital production?
So it's all digital. Yeah, to my knowledge, I don't think there are many film projector theaters left in Buffalo. I mean, it could be wrong, but at least to my knowledge, it's all a digital, you know?
Yeah, like North Park has, I think... Are they digital right now too?
I believe they are too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way I believe that the industry is going. You know, it's a more efficient way to do it. And you know, and the movies. I know people love film, of course, but the movies look great. You know, with these new restorations and stuff. So, you know, it's like seeing them brand new for the first time. You know, in that way.
Yeah. And so with that, I do want to. We'll ask a couple of questions too. Let me first off ask. I want to get this out of the way.
Sure.
What is your deal with Green Book? Because I know that might. It's just one of these things where I know everybody's got a deal with Green Book. But before everybody was on the not like like the kind of popular to bash Green Book thing. Mm-hmm. And I get that. I very much get that. Definitely was not in my top 20 this past year for movies.
Sure.
Probably not in my top 50 for best movies. It's just you. I would see these messages on social media from you that would just be like, can't wait, come in and see the Green Book coming up. So what provided this the need to vocally speak about the Green Book?
Well, you know, I haven't seen the movie yet, so I can't really speak to the quality of it. You know, but there's just, you know, every year I feel like there's that one movie that just, I don't know, for some reason doesn't sit well with me. I guess there's the Oscar bait type feeling with it, you know, the sort of hollow fairy tale, you know, and it's just, you know, I guess we don't live in fairy tale times. And sometimes, you know, that movie, you know, it just doesn't ring true with me. Not that every movie has to, but yeah, eventually I'll watch it. Well,
as a thing though, like it was crazy because my introduction to people kind of like ripping on it like that because I'd heard about it, I saw a trailer, I was like, maybe this will be good, you know, I like the actors involved, and then I'm seeing these passive aggressive tweets or Facebook messages that really stood out to me because then the Oscar season came along and now all of a sudden everybody else is doing this,
yeah.
And I'm just like, man.
Well, I think that's you know, it's that way with any movie that gets the laurels and the attention, you know. I mean, what was it last year? La La Land, was that? You know, I don't remember exactly when it came out, but the musical with Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone and all that. So I think that's just the nature of people. You know, they want to be cynical and sarcastic, you know, myself included for sure. But, you know, when everything's too precious, you know, sometimes. Yeah.
So let's talk about let's have an open conversation right now about the general state of horror, and that's what I want to pick your mind about. You know, you talk about putting on a lot of classic horror movies, mm-hmm. and it seems like there's how would you describe the history of the horror scene as far as film goes? Would you describe it in kind of like eras of directors that really kind of set precedent for the film? And or how is the best way to describe? Pretend I'm just getting into horror movies. How do you describe to a horror newbie, you know, the evolution of horror?
Well, you know, for me, it's, you know, people, you know, want to talk about, you know, there's a horror renaissance happening, which is true. But I feel like horror has always been a relevant genre, you know, because some of the earliest movies were horror, if I'm not mistaken, you know. And it's a genre that can evolve, you know, and it can keep up with the times and become relevant by using disguising social messaging within the horror of the movie, you know. And so I guess for people, it depends on what they're into. You know, for me myself, I love 80s horror because I love the soundtracks. You know, I love the special effects, the practical makeup. And sometimes they're just cheesy. And I'm the kind of person that is just completely fine with cheesiness. And not every movie I love has to be cheesy, but there's just something about just fun and free about those 80s classics that really speak to me. You know, and I feel like now, you know, horror is getting a lot of I would say maybe mainstream attention with, you know, Jordan Peele's Get Out. And he really has people reevaluating what the genre can do. You know, and I always think it's a genre that matters, but that's me. You know what I mean? For example, George Romero had a great way of masking social metaphors within the horror. You know, and there's something for everyone in horror. You know, if you like zombies, they're there. If you like vampires, werewolves, you like slashers, you like ghosts and stuff. No, and I think most people, They like a little spooky stuff, you know, whether they're hardcore horror fans or not. You want to dip your toes in, there's always the classics to look to, the, you know, anything by John Carpenter, I'd say, you know, Romero, you know, there's just, it's a buffet of options and wonderful pieces of work, you know.
Conjuring 3 is coming out, which speaks to the people want spooky things.
Yeah.
And how many paranormal activities are there? Infinity.
Right.
But that's something that really interests me. Do you think right now that that you have more? Because one of the things I struggled with in the late 2000s and the early 2010s, earlier this decade, I felt like there were less of Jordan Peele, George Romero type looks and more surface value, which again, sure, I like more surface value things, but it felt like when you got past Saw 1 into Saw 3, 4, and 5, sure, it felt like more emphasis on the gore side of things, sure, but less on the actual budget. It felt overproduced, essentially.
Oh, I agree. I feel like the early 2000s and the glut of remakes, for example, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre had a remake in the early 2000s, Hills Have Eyes. A lot of those, I feel like, were just nasty, grim affairs, you know? But there's always gems to be found in any era of movies and horror, especially. And there, you know, there's modern movies, for example, there's a movie called House of the Devil that I believe it's 2009 or so that came out. And that's, you know, a fantastic sort of Rosemary's Baby type throwback, you know, movie that's just full of like a love for the entire genre. It's just a popular, horror is a popular genre. I mean, you look at last year's Halloween, that, you know, not that money is everything, but it did make a ton of money, you know, and they gave that movie to, what's his name, Gordon Green, I forget, but he was like a prestige director. He did a movie called George Washington that's like a beautiful Terrence Malick-esque rumination, you know, on urban life or whatever. And so they gave him the keys to this Halloween movie. So, you know, you give these the keys to these big franchises, you know, to sort of like a prestige director, maybe an indie guy. And, you know, there's a little different flavor to it. Like, for example, that It 2017, which we talked about last time I was on the show, you know, that movie made, you know, was very popular. So, you know, I think it's just a good time. I think that the movies are a little more, there's a little more nuance to them now versus the early 2000s, where it was just like, let's churn out these remakes and make them brutal. Whereas now we're going to take some time and craft them. You know, we're going to have interesting actors and characters and you know, plots and things like that.
And I hear you on the side of things where there are some hidden gems too, like even in some of the main series, as much as you want to get out to, you know, the evolution of Nightmare on Elm Street,
sure,
and you had some of the extreme comedic effect, sometimes you get some of the gems that are there, like Nightmare 3 has
like
some of the
Dream
best
Warriors, yep,
of some of the best special, if like the practical effects,
yeah,
in there,
beautiful,
are amazing. Same thing goes with the death scenes in what, like, I always laughed at it as a kid, like, what a whore out for money, but the Jason X in space, like,
yeah,
the death scenes in that are, yeah, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Like, the practical effects are really good when, yeah, they go for them. So it seems like there's definitely those things, but there's definitely like seeing Get Out. Like, that was a trip back for almost that psychological horror thrill that it just didn't seem like there were a lot of those kind of. Felt like those kind of went to the wayside for a little bit.
Sure.
So my question to you now is what are some of your favorites? Is like what got you into horror?
Oh man. So I mean, I was born in 1986, so I grew up in the 90s, and a lot of my like fondest memories were like those Friday, Saturday nights when my dad would take me to like a mom and pop video store and just get to pick out a movie. And then we'd get some junk food on the way home and just go home and we, you know, watch the movie with my mom and sister as a family, you know, whatever it was, and just be together and see something, you know, a little scary, a little shocking, a little funny. You know, we used to watch a lot of Tales from the Crypt too, and, you know, stuff like Are You Afraid of the Dark? It was just there was a show, I believe it was on Saturday nights, called Up All Night with Rhonda Shear, and it was just like a horror host show. I think it was on USA Network, and they would play some random horror movie, whatever they could get at the time. But there was just something great about, you know, Saturday night at like midnight or, you know, 1 o'clock, whatever would be on. You know, there's something about you know, hiding under the blanket and doing that. But I would say a movie that really, really just changed me, that, you know, was just really frightened me half to death when I was younger, was the original Night of the Living Dead by George Romero. There was just something so terrifying to me about the thought of being trapped in a basement overnight with all these zombies coming in, you know. And I would have like nightmares of like zombies like surrounding the house and, you know, breaking in through the windows or whatever. And there's just something so dark and almost nihilistic about the ending to Night of the Living Dead, where the main character played by Dwayne Jones survives the night and then ends up getting shot in the head by like the you know, the people outside, I forgot what you would call them, the militia outside. They shoot him in the head and then they drag his body out and put him on this stack of bodies and like a pyre and just burn him up. And there was just something so like just bleak about that, that really shook me to the core, that, you know, and terrified me of zombies. Like, I was really scared. And then there was a point where it evolved when I got a little older, that the thing I was scared of became the thing that I loved. You know what I mean? Just, you know, zombies movies are one of my favorites. But so yeah, that will like always stick with me, just that thought of like, I'm trapped, you know, I can't get out. And then maybe you survive the night and you just get, you die anyway, you know. So that really, really got to me. But in terms of favorites, I really love the original Dawn of the Dead, this 1978 Romero film. That's a movie, like, if I'm sick or something, or I will just put that on, get cozy, and put that movie on. I've seen it so many times. And I love the original theatrical cut. That's my favorite version of the film. But it's not even so much that I love the horror of it necessarily, the gore or whatever. I just love the characters. So it's four main characters trapped in a mall, you know, during the zombie apocalypse. And you get to see, there's moments in the film where you get to see them have fun. They go through the stores and they try on clothes, they get food, they make a little apartment for themselves up in the, you know, the upstairs bunker, whatever it is. And there's some time that you think maybe they can make it. You know, they have the perfect setup. You know, they have food, they have clothes, they have a radio, TV, etc. They have the mall cleared out of zombies so that it can be their home. You know, they can make it. And then, of course, it doesn't work out, and you know, it goes bad for them. But there's just something that feels so lived in with that movie, so authentic. And of course, you know, I love the zombies, and there's some great, some special effects in that. But it's just about those characters that you really feel like you're spending quality time with them, you know, and you get to imagine yourself, what would I do if I was in a mall, trapped in a mall? Would I do that? Would I ride down the escalator, you know, or ride around in there? And there's something beautiful about that. Also, another one of my favorites is John Carpenter's original Halloween, of course, you know, Michael Myers. I think that's a perfect movie, you know. There's very few movies I'd say are completely perfect, and I'd say that probably, you know, Dawn of the Dead and Halloween are among them. There's just, it's such a streamlined, you know, movie full of like tension and suspense, you know, in Halloween. And of course, you can't beat John Carpenter's score, you know, and you know, you get to see Jamie Lee Curtis becoming a legend in that movie. And also, it could be debatable whether other people will consider it a horror movie, but I do. David Lynch's Eraserhead is a movie that I watched for the first time alone at like 2, 3 in the morning, and it was just so unsettling to me that I was tempted to throw that DVD in the garbage just because of the feeling that it gave me. I thought it was going to be some kind of, like, because I heard it was a cult classic. So at the time, I thought that cult classic meant campy, and this was going to be fun and goofy. And when I watched Eraserhead that first time, it wasn't any of those things. It was just deathly weird, you know what I mean? So yeah, I watched it, and it was just like a transformative experience watching that black and white, just terrifying horror that, you know. And then I watched it you know, a few more times, and now it's like a movie that feels like I lived in for me, that I can just watch it whenever and just enjoy that weirdness washing over me, you know, like a wave. What else? I would say Day of the Dead is another favorite of mine, another Romero, the original 80s one. That just, you know, the idea of being trapped in an underground bunker, you know, at the end of the world, and you know, trying to survive with everyone getting a little stir crazy, you know. So not only are you terrified of the undead surrounding you, but the people that are starting to lose their minds now. And there's just a whole, the sense of society just falling apart, you know, where, you know, the social norms that we have are, can be, you know, almost a facade when things really turn to the worst. And Day of the Dead explores that, you know, and it really great special effects, of course, but that goes without saying. So,
yeah, and so it sounds like too. There's just a little bit of, there's so much diversity within the horror genre that captures it. And mm-hmm. You kind of mentioned it. There's the campy side, you know, people who talk about Sam Raimi and his films, yeah. and then there's more of the just straight slasher gore side mm-hmm. of things that sometimes can be campy yeah. and sometimes just are not. Mm-hmm. And then there's the psychologically unsettling tales yeah. that come with there. And it sounds like some of the things you gravitate towards are some of those things that are a little bit more of the psychological, really challenge you to put yourself in the Avatar shoes. You're not watching somebody else. When you watch Halloween, you know, you're not specifically just Jamie Lee Curtis sure. against Michael Myers, but then when you're watching Day of the Dead, mm-hmm. you're one of those, or when in the mall, yeah. you are one of those people, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like, you know, watching a film where you can really identify with as one of the avatars in a horror film, is that a strength to you?
Oh, yeah, I think so. If the characters feel real and human and they're layered, I think that makes them feel more relatable and human. Like, oh, I could be friends with that person. I could hang out with them. You know, I could be with them there, you know. And not every horror movie has to be intellectual per se, you know, but there, if sometimes I want something I can sink my teeth into, and, you know, and those movies that I mentioned have all of that, you know, especially for Carpenter's Halloween. There's the technical aspect of that where you can just tell that Carpenter has almost like a scalpel-like precision with the way he's making a movie, you know. It's just free of fat. That movie is just, you know, we're doing this and the no extra stuff, you know what I mean? And all the mythology of Michael Myers and stuff, that came afterwards, after the original Halloween, and they countless sequels had to fill in the mythology. But in that original movie, you don't know what Michael Myers is, you know, exactly. And you don't need to know, you know. Sometimes the mystery is better, you know.
But Rob Zombie disagrees.
Well, clearly. I mean, you make a sympathetic villain, and then, I don't know, that's a little too much story for me. You know, there's a middle ground where I don't need to demystify Michael Myers by having this whole childhood thing. Not that the movie's bad or anything, but it's not the original, which is clearly a crafted movie, you know what I mean?
Did get Michael McDowell, though.
That's true. He plays a great Loomis, you know. He is pretty good in that role.
That's what I wanted. I want more Malcolm McDowell yeah. in these kind of films. Because
sure.
he captures that kind of mystery, mm-hmm. kind of. He seems like the guy I'd hire to challenge that kind of thing. But, all right, last thing I'll ask you that with that is past 5 years. You got to give favorite horror film past 5 years. Is it Get Out? Is it It Follows? Is it, as much as I really don't like it, The Witch?
yeah.
What's your favorite of the past 5 years?
So, yeah, you did mention a few that I really did enjoy. It Follows, The Witch. Let me see. I'm blank. Of course, I'm going to blank now. But last year there was that Panos Cosmatos movie, Mandy, starring Nicolas Cage. I mean, it's debatable if you want to call it horror or not, but I'd say it's a horror movie. Fantastic film, 5 years. So let's see here. There was a movie that came out last year, a French film called Revenge, that was really directed by a French woman. Really fantastic little movie. And what else did I enjoy? Let me think here. It Follows, The Witch.
And I mentioned mainstream there.
Right.
And you're talking about a lot of things else that a lot of times just don't get to the main theater role as well. Would you say that some of the best modern-day horror is stuff that's not big budget? I mean, that's always kind of seemed what it is, right?
Sure.
It's early booming success of slasher films, low budget. Some of the best horror films that really boomed popularity starts on low budget. Do you think that's kind of the same trend even? Like 50 years later, you're looking at it and you go... Yeah, a lot of these ones that don't hit your main screen, these are some of the best horror that we're getting right now.
Well, yeah. Well, especially with the streaming services, there's just so much content that a lot of really quality stuff gets sort of lost in the shuffle of everything that's on Netflix, et cetera. So there's a lot of quality stuff out there that there's just so much for people to watch that things get like fall in the cracks. The movie It 2017 was another favorite of mine, but that was obviously a very big budget film. But, when I'm at the theater, I try to get a horror movie there, for example. We did play It Follows during its original run. And at that same time, we had What We Do in the Shadows, the horror comedy. And last November, we had a one-night-only screening of Lars von Trier's latest film called The House That Jack Built, which I really enjoyed. It was the unrated director's cut. It's so dark. It's like I called it Seinfeld, as a slasher-type movie. It's just – but, I think, the way to keep, you just got to watch as much as you can, and take chances, you might not like it. You will find some gems, but there are things that, you're not going to dig, but you just keep watching, you keep looking and, somebody who, find somebody whose opinions you trust in the genre and say, hey, what have you been watching? And just have a conversation like that, and I try, to bring movies to Buffalo and, get people to check them out. So, it's all about spreading the message, like getting people excited, like for just everything that's happening. I'm really looking forward to the Pet Sematary movie coming out next month. I'm looking forward to Jordan Peele's Us that's coming out. There's just, just a ton of stuff that I makes me feel like a kid again. I'm so excited to come out,
And there's a spontaneity to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask this to follow up with there. Would you take movies that are made for streaming, and would you advocate potentially if there's a great horror film that comes out on a Netflix or a Hulu and try to get some screen time potentially for it in the future?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I don't know how the rights work for that. If it's like a Netflix movie, for example, but there are good there's a lot of good stuff that I've seen on Netflix. Can't of course name any right off the top of my head because the pressure's on. But yeah, if I could, if there was some, like for example, the movie. It's not a streaming movie necessarily, but. Early 2000s, a movie called Trick or Treat came out, an anthology film that, to my knowledge, never got a proper theatrical release. It was released strictly, straight to DVD or Blu-ray. But that's a movie, that I think is like a modern classic, and I think a lot of people would probably agree with me that that's a movie I put on pretty much every October. And that's never been on the big screen before. And so, yeah, it's a sort of a newer movie, but it I don't think it got the real celebration that it deserved by being like on a huge screen with a ton of people. It's a movie that's gotten legs over the years from people discovering it on DVD and Blu-ray, people posting it every October, and that's, I think, the passion of horror fans is what gives these movies a new life and, keeps them going.
It's that want for the community atmosphere, right?
Yeah, which I think is not entirely unique, but is special within the horror community, you know? And we just love, you know, talking titles and sharing and like, have you seen this one? Have you seen that one? And, you know, there's a lot of middle ground, you know, for movies, and maybe everyone, a lot of horror fans can agree that, you know, John Carpenter's Halloween is a classic, you know, and then you just build out from there. Like, what else do you like, you know, type of thing.
All right. Is there anything else you want to add that I haven't asked?
Well, I just, we got a couple of, you know, besides the Nickel City Con screenings, we have our regular screenings. On April 25th, we're screening the Italian zombie flick Burial Ground. That's on April 25th at 7:30. It's a 1981 film. A lot of fun. Borderline, it's so bad, it's good type thing. It's a movie that it's best not to know anything about and to just go in blank and just, you know, let the weirdness sort of wash over you. And then we're closing out this season six with the movie Chopping Mall. From 1986, starring Barbara Crampton. Great, great movie. That's on May 30th. So that'll be the last screening, and then we're going to take a, you know, a little break for the summer. But so, yeah, we got a couple of the regular screenings coming up, April 25th and May 30th, and then we have those three nights with Nickel City Con on May 16th, 17th, and 18th. We're going to have the screenings and the guests. So, yeah, you know, follow us on social media, you know, on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. You know, the best social media for terrors is probably Facebook.com/ Thursday Night Terrors. That's where we have the event page, event pages, and upcoming events, and all the info is usually there. So, yeah, and thanks for having me on.
And just to clarify too, May, it's a big, so it's, if you were going to go starting in April,
yeah,
or you know, when it's there, upcoming show this April.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good time to get in and check out what it's all about.
Yeah, it's going to be. I wouldn't even say whether you know the movie or not, doesn't particularly matter. If you want to have a good time, be around like-minded people who share a passion, you know, just pick one of the screenings and come out, and I, you know, will guarantee that you'll have, you know, a memorable night, you know, maybe meet some friends and learn some cool things, you know.
All right. I'm good to go on my end. There's one thing I do want to ask, I forgot to ask.
Oh,
and that was the, you mentioned a little bit about, but I didn't want to follow up. The Art of Terrors,
mm-hmm,
is, yes, something that really, it sticks out because it does when you look on Facebook and that. So can you talk about how that gets developed just a little bit?
Sure. So the first artist I worked with is a fella named Josh Flanagan. So he did, I believe, at least four or five seasons worth of art. And then, you know, he's a local guy, so I try to use, you know, local artists, of course, and developed a great friendship with him. And, you know, and then now we're working with another local artist named Daniel P. Morris. He's a good guy, too. So really, it just so I let the artist know, here's the movies we got coming up. And depending on the movie, for example, it'll be like, you know, hey, draw this character. And sometimes I'll even do sketches. They're really bad. They're really terrible. But it just to give Dan, for example, an idea of what I'm thinking. Probably my favorite poster that Dan has done for Terror is the Scream poster. We screened the original Scream, Wes Craven's movie, in October of 2018. And the poster he made for that is this black and white it looks almost like an old horror ad from the newspaper. So it's black and white, and it's got Ghostface and like the show times at the bottom, and it looks exactly like an old newspaper print ad. And so sometimes we have ideas like that, so we want it to look like a certain thing or like an homage. And you know, for me, it's, you know, it's got a pop, you know, and that's important because, you know, you go to the video store when you were a kid, it was the covers that drew you in, you know? And I think the art that we make for Terrors has to have a similar quality. Like, whether you know the movie or not, if that art brings you in, then that's, I think that works, you know? And that's why it's like, colors are important and, you know, cool character designs or whatever. And, you know, just to give something tantalizing to the audience and maybe make them curious about coming to check it out. But yeah, so local guys, and it's definitely a collaborative process where we go back and forth with ideas and there's drafts and, you know, but I'm not like, you know, like super, like an iron fist with it, you know, like it's mostly here's what I had in mind and let the artist do their thing. And then we discuss like changes and tweaks from there.
Well, it comes out and it does. I can tell you, it's one of the things that really stick out on Facebook. But kind of like you almost have like this collection now.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah, actually, it's funny because one of the terrorist crew, he has. So we make little 11x17 prints of the posters, and you know people just take them at every screening. But there's a guy named Mike Burns that he's got all the posters in a like little album, you know, for that size of poster. So he was just like showing me a video of him paging through all those like. Pieces of art. One day, you know, I'd love to like have them all like together like that, you know, so if I'm an old man, you know, I could look back at all this beautiful art and stuff that the artist made and you know, just cherish those these nights, you know.
So from the video store to the movie theater, yeah. And now it's kind of like you have that experience now.
Yeah, you know, and I think that might be the, you know, everyone's worried about people going to the movies anymore. But I think there is a way to do it where it's a mixture of, you know, new releases that people are excited about and a bit of repertory theater like what we're doing with Terrors and, you know, other things like that. You mix it, you know, because people have an interest in seeing the movies they loved as a kid or whatever it might be that they only have seen at home. There's an interest, like for me especially, we've been doing this now for almost 3 years, and still to this day I have not seen one of these movies on the big screen. So, and I'm a horror fan before anything else. So I always try to think of something, what other horror fans like. And so, I mean, I think that's how we keep this thing going, you know. You form you know, a bond with the people that come in and you like learn, you know, what do you want to see? What do you want to do? And that's how you keep things alive with a sense of community and listening, you know, and that's, people love going to the movies and getting popcorn and getting, you know, and we have the nice comfy recliners and there's just something that you can't replicate that at home. There's not, you know, there's nothing like it. And that's how you keep movies alive though, is you play a little bit of everything, you know?
Gotcha. Thank you very much.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me on. Yeah.